Before you take that vitamin C or sip that chamomile tea, consider this. The United States Food and Drug Administration wants to reclassify herbs, vitamins, and dietary supplements from foods to synthetic food preservatives, which means many of them will maybe pulled off the market and the rest regulated into oblivion. This leads us to ask, has the FDA sold itself to the international pharmaceutical industry?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 742nd edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Geneva who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, wherever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Ricochet on the boards. Hello, Rick.
Hey, Michael.
Folks, imagine being able to take control of the world's food supply and thus take total control of all the world's people. Why, you could force everybody to do exactly what you want when you want. You would have total control. Now consider the Codex Alimentarius, which in is Latin for Law of the Food. The Codex is a set of international protocols established by the United Nations back in 1963 to, and I quote, protect the health of consumers and ensure fair practices in the international food trade by ensuring that all the world's foods comply with the same rules. In 2005, the Codex crew established its guidelines for vitamin and mineral food supplements, which said, in effect, that vitamins and minerals would henceforth be regulated as drugs. This classification was in direct opposition to the United States, which under its Deschaux laws classifies vitamins and minerals as foods and regulates them as such. Now, there's a big difference between a food and a drug. If something is a food, it's pretty much free to move about the open marketplace at will. But if it's a drug, it may be tightly controlled and available only at government-licensed pharmacists. This difference can be defined in dollars and cents. Whereas a month's supply of DHA fish oil might cost $35 at the grocery store, the prescription version of the same oil might cost $189 at a licensed pharmacist. Now, this difference in dollars and cents, we can really begin to see why the international pharmaceutical industry would become advocates of the Codex Alimentarius. But what about the United States of America, where vitamins, minerals, and food supplements are foods protected by the Deschaux laws? Beginning with the Food Safety Modernization Act of 2010, and now the new Dietary Ingredients Protocols of 2011, the United States Food and Drug Administration appears to be moving with great dispatch to bring the U.S. into compliance with Codex Alimentarius. These moves lead us to ask, has the FDA sold itself to the international pharmaceutical industry? Here to help us find an answer to that big question, we have none other than attorney author Jonathan Emord. Jonathan, welcome to the Food Chain.
Good to be with you.
So, ladies and gentlemen, asking Jonathan Emord about the ethics of the FDA is probably like asking Robin Hood about the ethics of the Sheriff of Nottingham. Fair enough statement, Jonathan?
Fair enough.
Fair enough. So you're author of several books, including The Global Censorship of Health Information and The Rise of Tyranny. And you're also an attorney with a long and illustrious history of fighting and beating the FDA in federal court. And I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the court cases that you have brought against the FDA. What you're essentially asking the FDA to do is to allow certain claims to be made about the efficacy of food supplements, correct?
Right. We've attempted repeatedly to cause the FDA to permit nothing more than truthful claims about the effects of nutrients on disease. And the FDA has a historic, long-standing prior restraint that forbids any company in the supplement industry or even in the food industry from communicating truthfully the effects of nutrients on disease and has an absolute ban on the right of those companies to communicate truthfully information about the therapeutic effects of nutrients, that is, the effects of nutrients on active disease as opposed to prevention. And so even though, say, for example, prune juice is a treatment for chronic constipation, no one would deny that. If a company were to place that message on a prune juice bottle, they would instantaneously violate federal law, committing a felony, and would be subject to enforcement action, including seizure of their products, seizure of all information related to their products and the sale and promotion of them, and prosecution under the criminal laws for selling the products. And the products themselves would be deemed unapproved new drugs.
You mean if I were to sell a jug of prune juice and I would put on the label that, hey, this will help alleviate your constipation, I would become a felon?
Yes, and could be prosecuted, and you could end up in jail for as long as 20-year life sentence. It's a very serious offense, even though telling the truth in this country is protected by the First Amendment. The FDA absolutely refuses to restrict itself to the limits of the First Amendment, repeatedly entering into the market and censoring this information. We've fought the FDA repeatedly in federal court on claims, including folic acid reducing neural tube defect births, omega-3 fatty acids reducing the incidence of coronary heart disease, and B6, B12, and folic acid reducing the risk of heart disease.
Selenium.
Many other claims. And we've defeated them over and over and over again. Yet, despite that, the FDA still maintains the very same system of censorship that it did over a decade ago when we won the Pearson versus Shalala case in the Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit.
Well, I'm confused about myself here. I'm not sure about whether I want the subject of this show to be the FDA, but I think it just has to be. And my question of the day is the FDA, has it sold itself down the river to the international pharmaceutical industry? And I hope not, but that's the question that I just keep coming up with. And is it, in your mind, Jonathan Emore, is the FDA moving to bring the United States into compliance with the Codex Alimentarius, or am I just imagining things here?
Well, on your first question, it really is beyond debate that the FDA is a captive of the drug industry. The FDA's own associate director of the Office of Drug Safety, David Graham, has repeatedly testified, as have FDA medical reviewers under the Whistleblowers Act before Congress, that FDA is a captive of the drug industry. David Graham has said that the FDA considers the drug industry its client and approves as many drugs as it can, regardless of whether they're safe or effective. And we have a significant amount of drugs in the market presently that have been approved over the FDA's own medical reviewers' objections and are causing the very harms that the medical reviewers predicted. An egregious example of this that shows the extent to which the industry controls the FDA is the approval of the antibiotic Ketek. Ketek is a antibiotic that...
It sounds scary. Ketek.
Yes.
Well, you want some Ketek? No.
Yes, I have a little bit of that with your breakfast, why don't you? So Sanofi Aventis is the maker of Ketek, and what happened here was the medical reviewers discovered in their assessment of the application for this drug that certain information just looked too perfect to them. A clinical trial that was the basis for many of the claims appeared to them to be so pristine as to be surreal. And so they asked for the empirical data to underlying the clinical trial. They asked for the informed consent forms, identification of the patients, and identification of the principal investigators and the entire history of testing.
And lo and behold?
And lo and behold, they came up with a goose egg. The company could not produce the evidence. And this then led to a further inquiry and established that, in fact, the clinical trial was made up. Now, having said that, you would think that without question, the FDA commissioner would then deny the application, and that's what the medical reviewers at the agency wanted to have happen. But that's not the case. Instead, the FDA commissioner approved the application over the objection of the medical reviewers and put into market the drug. Not only that, he approved the claims for the drug that include claims derived from the fraudulent clinical trial. In other words, claims that were not proven.
Make it all up.
And this drug is still on the market. Now, this is not the only case of corruption within the agency, but it's a good example. I explain in my book, The Rise of Tyranny, numerous examples of FDA approval of unsafe drugs over the medical reviewer's objections.
And what we're talking about today is this firewall, kind of, that we've established between drugs and foods, and how we seem to be taking our foods and putting them into the drug category so that they can be owned by the people who own the FDA. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. Today we're talking with Jonathan Emord about the federal government's efforts to bring us in line with the Codex Alimentarius and thus gain total control over what we may or may not eat. Right back.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, hey, welcome back. This is the Food Chain Radio program with your host, Michael Olson. Guest today, Jonathan Emord. Folks, you know, if you go down to the grocery store and buy a month's supply of DHA fish oil, that fish oil might cost you $35. But if you have to buy it on a prescription from a licensed pharmacist, it might cost $189. So you can see why if the international pharmaceutical industry can convert foods into drugs and control them, think how much more money they're going to make. And thus, the Codex Alimentarius. But here in the United States, we are protected by the Deshe laws. The Deshe laws consider these things to be foods, and they may be sold as such. But it seems to us, in looking at what's been going on recently with respect to the Food Safety Modernization Act and the new dietary protocols being put on the table this year, that the Food and Drug Administration is moving quickly to bring us into, to bring the United States into compliance with Codex Alimentarius. Jonathan Emord, is this true or am I imagining things?
Well, it's the general premise is correct. The Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations and the World Health Organization run the Codex Alimentarius Commission. It has member states from all of Europe and from other parts of the world, including the United States and Canada. And it has been dominated for some time by Europeans, and particularly the Germans, who have advocated a very aggressive regime that would cause countries to put maximum dose levels and minimum effective dose levels for supplements, and then would require that there be safety evaluations. Now, this sounds in and of itself innocuous, but the impetus or push for regulation then leads to the adoption of model regulation in sympathetic countries. Not every country has to adopt what Codex proposes. You can not do so, but you have to issue a statement explaining why to the Codex. Otherwise, you're presumed to be willing to be bound by these things. And what they do is they each member state then adopts regulations that it thinks will conform with what Codex wants. Now, what has happened is the European Union has adopted the most draconian regulations on supplements in the world. It has forbade the sale of any supplement unless it is pre-approved by the government and at a dose level that is considered safe. It has also transformed the system for safety review, which historically has been known as the Paracelsian principle of toxicity, which says the dose determines toxicity. In place of that, they have adopted a thing called the precautionary principle, which presumes every supplement and every ingredient to be unsafe because at some dose level it'll create toxicity, and requires the industry to expend money to prove to a near certainty that the products are safe at a dose level, and then it's allowed. It's further complicated by the fact that that safety is such a broad determination in this instance that if there's pharmacological activity that could cause, say, for example, an allergic reaction in some small subset of the people, then you have to go to a lower dose that will not. This, in effect, makes it impossible to sell any effective dose of a supplement in Europe. What's happening is that approximately 500 to 800 dietary supplements in Europe are now being stricken from the market as a result of this system that is not approving supplements that were previously consumed there safely, and that is disallowing claims for supplements, even claims about structures and function effects.
All right.
It's just, it's a new dark age for nutrition science.
So in other words, if you look at enough dandelions, you're going to go blind sooner or later. And therefore, all dandelions cause blindness. And therefore, there will no longer be any dandelions allowed to grow. Something like that.
Yeah, and if you take a look at the United States' response to this, it's been sort of an insidious one of encroachment, adopting quite a bit of the European model here in the United States through regulation and through enforcement without any admittance, public recognition, or solicitation of comment from the public on the transition. It started with the action against Ephedra many years ago.
Right.
I was the lawyer who won the case in the district court against the FDA that overturned their ban, and then on appeal it was that decision was reversed. But that that action by FDA prohibited ephedrine alkaloids in their entirety from being sold as supplements, even at dose levels beneath which there was no proof whatsoever of any adverse physiological effect. So as a consequence, the FDA used, in fact, in that case, the precautionary principle. It said, at some dose level, ephedrine alkaloids are unsafe, and therefore we will ban it in its totality, and they did so. That is an example of an adoption of the European principle, and it means that FDA can, at its whim, eliminate any product from the market. The same thing's happening now with the new regulations.
Now, here in the United States, we have something called the Deshaies Laws that is essentially supposed to protect us from that kind of government running amok, is it not?
Well, as my colleague Peter Barton Hutt, an attorney considered the dean of the Food and Drug Bar, admitted in an article, explained in an article, the FDA commissioner, then David Kessler, at the time the DSHEA was adopted, told his staff, "I will not enforce this law." In other words, we have a lawless or a rogue agency in the FDA that thinks itself above the law, and so the parts of the DSHEA that are most protective of the right to access supplements and to receive information have been violated with impunity by the FDA through a conscious plan of avoidance, aversion, and violation to ensure that the drug regime is protected from any source of competition and to limit the public's awareness and access to particular supplements in the market.
Now, Deshaies is an acronym that stands for Dietary Supplements
Health and Education Act.
Okay, there you go. I knew it stood for something reasonable, but like many of these things, you know, they seem to start out very reasonable. I mean, the idea here is to protect us, right? And that's what the Codex was set up to do. And yet, it seems like people find an opportunity in these laws and buy into them, and then the laws become used as ways to restrict trade or to establish kind of monopolies. And I just wonder if that's where we're headed with respect to the effort to water down or ignore the Deshaies Laws. Are we protecting somebody else
without
here?
Without question. Oh, certainly. The evidence of this is profound, and I've included it in my book, The Rise of Tyranny, and also in my book, Global Censorship of Health Information. And what happens is the FDA favors its principal regulatee, which is the drug industry, to the disadvantage of the supplement industry. In the case of claims, FDA has granted the drug industry a monopoly on the right to make therapeutic claims, even to the exclusion of truthful therapeutic claims about elements in foods and foods.
And they can do so because they have scientific studies with no subjects, like you just mentioned before, right? The one, they could just make up their own scientific studies. Essentially, they're the ones who say this is the scientific evidence for our claim, right? I mean, there's nobody else that is examining this stuff, is there?
No, the drug industry itself, one of the great frauds of the 20th century is the drug approval process, by which the drug industry submits an application based on its own testing and makes its own representations concerning the effectiveness and safety of the drug. And unless the application includes an admission that the drug is unsafe, then the FDA presumes it to be safe. And unless there's representations or evidence in the drug application that calls into question the effectiveness of the drug, the FDA assumes the drug to be effective. The FDA does no independent testing, relies entirely on what's submitted to it. Even with that, pretty sharp FDA medical reviewers have seen through applications like that of the Ketex Sanofi Aventis application. But it's not the case that the FDA does any critical, serious assessment. As David Graham has said, under the Prescription Drug User Fee Act, the drug industry pays for the review process as well. He said, "He who pays the piper calls the tune here."
And gets their money's worth. Folks, this is The Food Chain, right back with Jonathan Emord. The question, why does Europe classify foods as drugs? Right back on The Food Chain. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Well, folks, before you take that vitamin C or sip that chamomile tea, consider this. The United States Food and Drug Administration wants to reclassify herbs, vitamins, and dietary supplements from foods to synthetic food preservatives, which means many of our favorite vitamins, minerals, and herbs and supplements and whatnot may be pulled off the market, and the rest, who knows, might be regulated into oblivion. This leads us to ask, has the FDA sold itself to the international pharmaceutical industry? And that's the question on the table today. Why does Europe classify foods as drugs under the Codex Alimentarius? With us here to answer that question, we have Jonathan Emord, who is an attorney who often takes the FDA to task and often wins, and also the author of several books detailing, the rise to tyranny, for one. Jonathan, we have a guest here in the studio who heard that you're going to be on the show, so he came in and talked about how he had purchased 10 copies of your Rise to Tyranny and gave them to all the local libraries. So you're here in the area.
Well, I'm very grateful for that.
So let me ask you this, Jonathan. Why does Europe classify foods as drugs?
It's a subtle shift that lays a foundation for doing just that. What is happening in Europe is that any dose level of a nutrient that has pharmacological activity, and by that I mean, for example, let's say...
Well, what doesn't?
Pardon me?
What doesn't have pharmacological activity?
Well, right. That's right. But what they're doing is taking things like vitamin C, and above the RDI level of vitamin C...
Which was not put down by Linus Pauling, right?
Right. Above that level, vitamin C then begins to have immune-enhancing effects and can alter various chemical processes in the body in favorable ways, but also... Anytime a process does that very thing, it also exposes certain potential parts of the audience consuming it to adverse effects. One of common one for vitamin C, for example, at high dose levels is diarrhea. Now, what the European Food Safety Organization does is say, okay, well, If you take a dose of vitamin C above 65 milligrams, that dose level may produce adverse effects in a certain part of the population. Therefore, it's unsafe under the precautionary principle and may not be sold as a dietary, as a food supplement in Europe. And because it may not be sold as a food supplement, the only way by which it can be made available at a dose level like that is if sold as a drug. Therefore, when a drug company comes in, it may make a synthetic version and then get drug approval with a patent and then get drug approval so it has a monopoly. And then if you wish to have a high dose level of vitamin C for a particular use, you may then only obtain it through your physician. This is the universe that exists in Europe, and this is the transition that's taking place, so that you would have to go to a store and buy massive quantities of a particular nutrient and gobble them all down in order to receive the same effect that you could buy from having one unit of it that has an adequate quantitative amount. And many herbal substances will be just entirely stricken from the market in Europe over the next couple of years. And in other words, it's a paternalistic environment in which all sovereignty exists in the hands of the state, and individuals are denied freedom of choice and sovereignty over the basic decision what to ingest in order to maintain their health and to avert disease. They're being denied that, and they're instead existing in a paternalistic environment in which political officials who have an economic interest in favoring the drug companies, because they're the only ones that can pay them back when they leave office, they are making the decisions to restrict everyone's access to these things. I predict that in Europe over the next decade or two, we're going to see an extreme change in the health environment. There'll be far more instances of preventable disease because people are going to be shifting their dietary consumption habits by force of the government there and losing their access to supplements that for many, many years they've depended upon to keep their immune system operating at peak levels and to be otherwise healthy. This is the kind of thing we're also facing here. The new dietary ingredient proposal of the FDA is an absolute disaster that would destroy about 50% of the dietary supplement industry in the United States. We had an economic analysis done by Joanna M. Shepherd Bailey.
Before we go into that, Jonathan, what exactly is the dietary ingredient thing that is now on the table, complements of our food and drug? So going back to Europe for just one second, is what happening here is that the governments are taking total control of our food. Yeah. So that only they can determine what we can eat? Is that what you're saying?
Well, that's right. It's a highly paternalistic environment in Europe. The European Union has all member states of Europe as members. Those members have ceded their own sovereignty to the European Union in order to make decisions in certain areas, one of which is public health and safety. And so if you live in England, and the European Union operating in Brussels decides that there should be no more access to, say, fish oil, or there should be no more access to various other substances,
dandelion wine or anything. They can determine anything.
In Europe, it's gone. The states of Europe then are legally obliged to enforce that determination and rid the market of the product that the European Union determines it will not allow.
So this gives the large pharmaceutical corporations that, you know, have the economies of scale sufficient to donate liberally to these politicians, the leverage they need to control the food. Really?
Well, that's right. In Global Censorship of Health Information, my book, explain the process by which the drug industry has effectively taken control over every government in the world that regulates drugs. Not every government does regulate drugs. There are a minority of governments that don't. But in all of the industrialized world, every government regulates drugs and uses the very same regime of censorship and access restriction that exists here in the United States. Some are more draconian than our own laws. But the point is that this has been a conscious effort by the largest state-sponsored monopolies in the world, the drug industry, to achieve this objective, and they've succeeded magnificently around the world. Enforcement goes on around the world to prevent people who sell foods and dietary supplements from telling people what those foods can do to improve health and avert disease or treat disease. That is as common in the United States as it is in Canada, as it is in England, as it is in France, Spain, Germany. So you see, there's no escape from this all-encompassing reach of the pharmaceutical industry, and we do have a global battle. I've been part of an international coalition of attorneys and public interest groups that meets periodically three or four times a year. We assess the landscape, and then we determine what legal actions to take in different parts of the world.
You really are like Robin Hood, aren't you?
Well, I don't have
this. Folks, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here with attorney, author, Robin Hood, Jonathan E. Mord. And we're talking about the dietary supplements that we take to keep ourselves healthy and how it appears as though our own Food and Drug Administration is making moves to take that right away from us. Is that true? It can't be true. 831-479-1080. Join us if you can. Well, it sounds like they're trying to take our food away. They're trying to reclassify our food from being food to being a drug. And if they can reclassify it as a drug, then they can control it, and they can make us buy it through licensed pharmacists and pay 50 times as much for it. But, hey, it can happen here because we have the Deshaies laws to protect us, and we have the government to protect us. Right, Jonathan E. Mord?
Well, unfortunately, as David Graham said in his testimony to Congress, the American public is virtually defenseless, he said, from unsafe drugs and from the government's interest in protecting the monopoly that they've created in the drug industry. If we take this new dietary ingredient guidance, for example, you would think this is an innocuous thing. The FDA FDA is supposedly defining for us what the statute means by new dietary ingredient. And it's choosing to do so not through a rulemaking, not by soliciting comments and saying we can't act unless we adopt this following comment, but rather by just adopting a guidance and saying this is what our guidance is, and then announcing that, well, a guidance is not necessarily the law, because while we're telling you this is what you must do, we may enforce it in a different way, or we may not consider it to be a law that we enforce, even though we in fact enforce it. This type of nonsense is what this is about. And here's the effect of it. We had Joanna M. Shepherd-Bailey look at this rule. Under this rule, FDA redefines what constitutes a new dietary ingredient. A new dietary ingredient is illegal to sell in the United States under DSHEA unless it's pre-approved by FDA or unless it falls under an exception in the statute. FDA has taken the exception in the statute and essentially ruled it out of existence so that the approval process becomes the only way. Now, here's what's worse. They're taking substances that are already on the market, and they're reclassifying them as new dietary ingredients. So, for example, any herb that is made through a process that extracts the active ingredient of the herb from the plant using something other than water or one kind of alcohol is defined as a new dietary ingredient. Anytime a raw fruit that was used before October 15th, 1994 is suddenly changed to a ripe fruit, or if the method by which fruit is used in a supplement is altered, or if any innovation in technology is used by which substances are made, these things all cause a dietary ingredient to become a new dietary ingredient. So looking at all of the effects, and I've only mentioned some of the restrictions, Dr. Shepherd-Bailey from Emory University, an expert in, she's an economist who's an expert in assessing the economic impact of regulation, explains that between 22,240 and 41,700 dietary supplements will have to be removed from the market at a cost of between $2.3 billion and $4.3 billion in 1 year. and also just to file the studies that the FDA will require for safety to get those products back on the market would cost between $450,000 and $6.6 million for each new dietary ingredient application. She estimates that the overall cost for all of the FDI notifications that would have to be filed would be between $2 billion and $165 billion, depending upon the specific ingredients and the combination of ingredients. And it would have an effect. It would shrink the supplement market by 28 to 52%, she concludes, and an annual loss of $7.84 billion to $14.7 billion for the industry. She estimates that between 55,720 and 104,475 workers in the supplement industry would lose their jobs, because this would not only affect the supplement industry, but all other industries that are dependent upon the supplement industry. She says that the overall economic impact would be between $21.2 billion and $39.8 billion annually, and it would cause between 127,598 and 239,247 jobs to be lost. So this is a horrific and extraordinary action that is going by largely without public awareness.
So what you're saying is that the FDA, without so much as a by your leave or excuse me, ma'am, is changing our entire food chain, taking essentially removing a huge percentage of the supplements that we take and taking control of them and not allowing us access.
Right,
to them.
And this is a conscious plan not only by the Obama administration's FDA, but also by its principal protagonist or supporter in Congress, Senator Dick Durbin, who is the co-senator from Illinois with Barack Obama before he became president, close confidant of Barack Obama. He's also the majority whip in the Senate, right under Harry Reid, so he's a very powerful man, and he was behind the Food Safety Modernization Act, which has draconian teeth in it. He also has pending a bill, the Dietary Supplement Labeling Act, which is also extremely draconian. All of these combined pose a mortal threat to the supplement industry, and Durbin has a visceral hatred for that industry, has for some time.
So it's really the government taking total control of our food.
Using regulation to so increase the cost of staying in business in the supplement industry and so increase the threat of enforcement against supplement makers and distributors as to intimidate them out of the business or force them out of the business and reduce dramatically the size of the operatives in it, making it fair game as a market for the drug industry. What ultimately would happen then is that the drug industry would come forth with a number of synthetic patented compounds that would mimic the effects
that only they can sell us. And folks, this is the Food Chain. We have a few more minutes left here with attorney author Jonathan Emord, the Robin Hood of the food supplement industry. And we're asking the big question today, and it's a question that you should ask yourself and ask your friends and neighbors. Has the United States Food and Drug Administration sold itself to the international pharmaceutical industry? Right back. Well, folks, I don't know about you, but I grew up in a world where I really looked up to the government to protect me, to watch over me, and to help me get by in the world. And yet, given what's been going on with our food lately, particularly the Food Safety Modernization Act of 2010, which was passed in Congress during the late hours of Christmas Eve and shoved down the nation's throat, and what's going on with the attempt to redefine our vitamins and minerals and herbs as food contaminants or something like that, I'm looking at my government and wondering what's going on. Instead of watching over me, the government seems to be watching over somebody else, namely those who have the economies of scale sufficient to buy it off. And so the question on the table today that I'm asking, and I hope I'm wrong, has the United States Food and Drug Administration sold itself to the international pharmaceutical industry? And here to help us answer that question, we have Jonathan E. Morden. And I don't suppose Jonathan is a unbiased reporter, so we'll take what he has to say in the knowledge that he has been up against the FDA for many, many years, fighting them for the ability to have these things and to use these things as our foods instead of as drugs. Jonathan, I don't know, what do you say to people who are like me and who are just going, what on earth is going on?
Well, I too grew up in a country that I thought was comprised of a government that would not rapaciously attack its own citizens in defense of the economic interests of the largest industries in the world. But I've learned otherwise, and I don't come to this void of fact. This is not a bias. This is born of experience, 26 years of interacting with the Food and Drug Administration and being vexed at every turn by virtue of the fact that regardless of the proof, regardless of the strength of the evidence supporting the notion that a food or a food element has a therapeutic effect, the government has refused to allow it to happen, to reach the public, at the same time mouthing the platitude over and over again that the FDA is the guardian of the public health. We can take the example which started my career with the FDA of folic acid. Folic acid, by almost every sound scientific judgment in the world, is responsible for reducing the risk of neural tube defect births. 400 to 800 micrograms of folic acid should be consumed by women of childbearing age every day before they become pregnant. And this information the CDC accepted, other government agencies accepted, and communicated to physicians. Yet David Kessler at the FDA and the FDA's Center for Food Safety and Applied Nutrition absolutely prohibited the communication of that information where it was needed most, in the marketplace, on foods and on supplements containing that amount of folic acid, so that women would be able to know before they went in for prenatal planning in the typical circumstance they go once they've become pregnant, before they would become pregnant. Well, we couldn't get the FDA to approve this for 10 years, and FDA the entire time contributed to 2,500 preventable neural tube defect births a year. We ultimately won in federal court, and even when we won, the FDA refused to abide by the court order. We had to go back into court and beat them again. So this is my opinion based on sound fact.
And you are Jonathan E. Mord, and this has been the Food Chain Radio Program. Folks, tune in with Jonathan E. Mord, E-M-O-R-D, and learn a lot about your food. Thank you all for tuning in, and thank you, Jonathan.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.